We are back for season 5 of Out of the Main. I am Tom Nixon.
And I am not. I'm your brother, John.
Oh, well, nice to see you here again.
Again, yeah.
Yes. So we are brothers Nixon, co-hosts of Out of the Main, born at sea, raised on radio. Here back for some more trouble.
Yeah. And as John Lennon would say, it feels just like starting over.
It does. Because we are going back to our original story, which was the origin stories. Our very first episode. Consider this the sequel to that.
Are we allowed? Okay. I was going to say, are we allowed to revise our history? Everyone's doing it.
Every other podcast does. Well, yeah. To rehash things very quickly. So, yes, if you never heard the very first episode of this year podcast, it was 5 years ago now. It was called Origin Stories, and we did two things. One is we discussed the origin of Yacht Rock and where that came from. Mm-hmm. Little did we know how little did we know.
Mm-hmm. That continued. That was a continuing theme.
It still does to this day.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was just we recapped, and then we went on to ask guests on the show, what was your origin story? For, like, how did you get into this Yacht Rock thing? How did you discover it, etc.? Remember that?
Yeah, and we even had some big name artists on come on and give us interviews, and they told us their stories, their origin stories of how they got into it from a artistic standpoint. Both some lead artists, big time lead artists like Kenny Loggins and Mark Jordan, Firefall, etc., and then some of the other sort of session guys, the behind the scenes, which are essential players in Yacht Rock, the studio musicians, guys like Marty Walsh, for example, names that you didn't know until you knew the name and then you started seeing it. So we dug into all of that.
Yes, quite deep dive, if I may say so. But I want to go back to where this all began because, you know, I recently confessed that I'm sort of here for all the wrong reasons, meaning that when I first decided that maybe there's an idea for a podcast about Yacht Rock, I didn't mean what I thought I meant. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about the thing Yacht Rock in terms of what JD and the boys created. It was about the music.
Right.
That I was hearing on things like Pandora, I think how I originally got into it, Sirius, you know, most of which is not truly Yacht Rock. But I just reminded myself recently that, like, it was the love of that music that got me into this in the first place.
Yeah, we've always taken the approach that we've wanted to dig into and analyze how this music was made, who were the people behind it, what were the techniques that were used, what were some of the secret sauces that were used. It was more a celebration of this era of music that we think was a particular peak, a time where everything came together at the right time to create what we believe as the pinnacle of recorded popular music in history, at least up to this point. So it was a celebration of that. It didn't have to be bound by the barriers or the parameters of what qualifies as a Yacht Rock song or not a Yacht Rock song. I mean, we dipped our toe into that a little bit and played around with that, but that's not really what we were interested in.
No. And, you know, for example, our very first guest, I think, or one of our very first guests was Firefall, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was just an honor. And for, like you just said, for all the reasons that we love Firefall or the reasons that we love this era, you know, thinking that those were the reasons we specifically loved Yacht Rock. And I will say I do love Yacht Rock with a capital Y and a capital R. Mm-hmm. But another, when we did the How It's Made episode, we were talking about that 10cc song, you know, which is a Yacht Rock and things like that. So,
but, yeah, some of that was just, yeah, we didn't know.
Right.
You know, but it also is true that we marveled at that, and I'll marvel at that whether it was Yacht Rock or not.
Yes.
So I'm glad we did it.
Which brings us back to this day.
Yeah.
Which is resetting kind of what the whole podcast has always been about, which is the music. And like you said, our love for it, our exploration of it. Still want to go out and find stuff that is, quote unquote, a buried treasure.
Yes.
But probably less strictly so about Yacht Rock, capital Y, capital R, and even maybe Yacht Rock in the colloquial sense.
Oh, meaning like the serious radio sense that, that allows other stuff in that we know doesn't rate. But, you know, there's always been that, you know, what is really Yacht Rock in terms of what the Yachtsky scale says, and then the public's understanding of what Yacht Rock is. And the public's understanding is not correct by a technical definition. But sadly for the Yachtsky side of things, that understanding of Yacht Rock that is incorrect is growing faster then it's like you're trying to use a bucket to get water out of a boat that's leaking faster than you can bail the water out. And that, unfortunately, that's where they are right now.
Yep. You know? You even stuck a nautical pun in there, too. Yeah. About the boat is sinking.
We're not supposed to be doing that anymore, I thought.
No. Yeah, we can still do that.
Okay, cool.
Yep. Yeah. What do you call something that has two meanings and they're somewhat contradictory, for example?
A pair of docks.
No, a paradox.
Ah, yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. Good. Work that in after all.
Yeah.
But in the last couple of years, we've also gone what we considered off the map. So we did a whole album focus on the Boston album. And
yes. We used things. The Bermuda Triangle to get there, too. What a trope that was.
Well, now we don't have to do that anymore.
No.
But what's fun about those is going back to what you just said just now, and then something you said at the end of the last season, which is, we explored those horizons because of all the same reasons that got us into this podcast erroneously in the first place, which was the love of the music, the love of the era. We're going to come back to discussing whether and why we think it peaked in the 70s and 80s.
Okay.
But it's all about this. Something magical was happening between, say, 74 and 88, mm-hmm. maybe expanded. And we want to capture that. We want to explore it more deeply, which brings me to the segue that you, this brings me to a segue to mm-hmm. the cliffhanger
yeah.
that you dropped at the end of season four, which was?
Well, the question was kind of what you just sort of shaped up there, is that the things that we loved about it, which the recording quality, the arrangement sophistication, the level of songwriting, the harmony, and all those things were all peaking at that point, and we've talked about it in the sort of understanding of yacht rock. But it's my question was, are those things tied to just yacht rock, or can we expand further out and see beyond the barriers of yacht rock and see other artists that would be considered adjacent or just flat out in yacht, but yet all of those things still apply? And if that's true, I want to look at them,
yeah.
right? I want to study them. And it made me think that so much of yacht rock, as I alluded to earlier on, it was so session musician driven.
Yes.
Not exclusively, but there weren't a ton of what you would consider self-contained bands that were yachty. It was a lot of solo artists with these session musicians, whether we're talking like a Boz Scaggs, Michael McDonald eventually went solo. Mm-hmm. There was Pablo Cruz and Doobie Brothers, but they were more the exception. A lot mm-hmm. more were a front person and then these session cats. The thing that this allows us to talk about now is more these self-contained bands that were around at the time that really we couldn't touch before. Obviously, Eagles. But, you know, Journey and Boston and Chicago and
all these cities.
What's that?
They're all cities. Atlanta Rhythm Station.
There you go. But you know what I'm saying? Even going so far as to look at the growth of a band like Queen from like hard rock prog up through, you know, synth pop superstars and all things in between. We can track these things. And they have nothing to do with yacht rock, but they do have everything to do with this era.
Yes. And it wasn't confined just to the West Coast, although there was magic going on in yeah. LA, as we've yeah. really explored deeply. But there was something about that time, which maybe we could talk about that a little bit. Like, why? I'll just set up some parameters to try to zero in on this era.
I wrote some notes on that, so I'll try to answer and include my notes as well.
Awesome. So if we're talking like, let's say 70s and 80s, we'll just leave it that open for now. It's easy to make the case that the equipment had not peaked prior to 1970, right? You can't say the stuff in the 60s and the 50s was better. So we know that. You could say beyond the 80s, maybe it continued to modernize.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's an argument about whether it got necessarily better, maybe high def, more high res.
I have notes on that.
You want to hit on that?
Okay, let me give you my thing, and then you can ask maybe what I've missed. So, I tried to think of it as a along a timeline. So, the beginning of what we would know as quote popular music, and when don't confuse popular music with pop music. Pop music eventually became a term that we know as more of the simple, more saccharine, more mass appeal kind of stuff. But I'm talking popular music, meaning the type of music that was consumed popularly by culture. So that can include stuff beyond just pop artists.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's going to include anything from hard rock to jazz and big band, all of that stuff. Probably started in the 1920s when we had the ability to start recording, but there was, you know, blues and things happening before that. But it began to take form into what we understand now as popular music in the 20s, into the 30s, 40s, all of that period of time. Now, there's a limitation into the diversity of the music. The reason being is that there were really only a few ways to really, let's say, fill an auditorium. You know, maybe a small combo could play, right, in a smaller room. Or if you were filling a bigger room, you needed an orchestra or a big band because we didn't have amplification yet.
Right.
So there wasn't a wide variety of what you could do musically. It was really either big band, orchestra, or small combo kind mm-hmm. of stuff. Now you get into the 50s, 60s where amplification starts to take place. All of a sudden, we can continue to still do the jazz thing and the big band thing and the orchestra thing, but now we can start doing what we began to know as rock and roll, mm-hmm. amplifying things, microphones, and things that evolve out of that, distortion. Now you could play louder than you ever could before. You could play dirtier and grungier, things you couldn't do with just a violin or a trumpet or whatever, mm-hmm. right? So now we've got a wider palette. That continues then into the 70s, where you can continue to do all of that if you want. But then the 70s gave us, as recording quality improved, now we could also say, well, what if we went the opposite way and now we tried to record this stuff and create as beautiful and as close of a representation of a recording to what we're hearing in the room and catch it on tape, and that you'd have that for posterity and broadcast and all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. Then more and more gear starts to develop for the process of doing that. So that includes compressors, bigger consoles, more tape, more tracks, reverb units, effects units, all of that stuff. And then it became, well, what if we went beyond recording something that sounds like a representation of the band in the room. Mm-hmm. Now we're starting to use these things as vehicles to make the sound hyper real, beyond real.
Are you getting to the 80s right now?
This is where we're getting into the 80s. Yeah. And we're talking about people like, you know, the old evil David Foster thing or Bob Clearmountain or any of these great mixers that use the studio as a creative tool beyond just capturing the performance. Now you are going into this mix stage and creating other sounds that were otherworldly that we had not heard before. Now that continues to advance. So that's why we got to there. Now we've got all of this diversity of possibilities of things that you can do musically. So there's a wider palette out there for people to explore, to record, to listen to. But somewhere along the line, three things started to invade what was going on musically.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them favored sound over musicality, for lack of a better word. So we became less concerned about writing great chords, great melodies, and we became more concerned about how it sounds. So we got that sound of the big 80s where you spent more time getting that Canon sound on your snare drum reverb than you did actually writing the song sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, but the grunge era came in,
mm-hmm.
and that was far more about attitude than it was about song structure or chords.
It's
right?
about aggressiveness, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Hip hop came in, didn't care a lick about chords, right? Or popular music, pop music, as I said, basically became taken over by the remix circuit, where mm-hmm. every pop song was really a remix, sort of what was, you know, the techno era had sort of invested itself. So all of these songs were basically sounded like something you'd hear in a club, yep. right? And they were more interested in just the beat. They weren't worried about writing songs. They weren't worried about bridge. They weren't worried about chords. They weren't worried about any of that. And so that explains why things, in our view, took a downturn,
mm-hmm.
right? So we saw the peaking of diversity, we saw the peaking of recording quality, and we saw the peak of melodic harmonic stuff in the 70s to early 80s period. And then after that, things changed.
Yep. The one era that you probably implied but didn't, I don't think, specifically mention is when you were going through the progression of advancement is after the Clearmountain stuff became the synthesizers.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we were interested in making new sounds that couldn't exist
yes.
before. And there was an artistry to that too, which brings
Agreed.
Me to my point, is that the other thing that I feel like peaked in the 70s and the early 80s was the artistry. And by that, I mean, sometimes we weren't only writing songs. I don't mean we, I mean they. We weren't not just writing songs. We were creating art.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example, a few examples. We've gone over a lot of these. Well, you know, you wouldn't today have anyone sit down and spend the time to write a Bohemian Rhapsody, right? You wouldn't have anyone sit down and take the time to write Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
These are like songs that take the listener on a journey. Radio play be damned, because it's probably too, I mean, they would, AOR stations would play them, but pop, you know, mainstream stations.
But when they were making those songs, they had in their mind, radio and probably won't touch this song. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
right.
In the back of their mind, they didn't care.
Right.
They were going to make it anyway.
Because they were trying to create something that was more than just a song. And you saw this take place a lot, even so just outside of yacht rock, what I would consider now classic rock, Queen, Led Zeppelin. You have artists coming up with concept albums like Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Styx picks that up, you know, and runs with Kilroy was here. And so now we're not only just talking
theater.
About making a song.
Right.
We're making art. Now we're making an album, which is a concept, which at times could become a movie.
Yeah, I just listened to The Wall just yesterday.
Yes.
Yep.
And so, like, who does that today? I mean, the closest thing is Taylor Swift making a movie about her tour, but that's not what
this is.
That's
not the same thing, yeah.
And so there was a real intent, and I don't think it lasted past like 1986 or so, where it's like, we want to make something that's enduring, that's important. Everything became just like, let's.
Do you think people thought of that as being like pompous or over the top? And then people, or was it just an excuse to say, man, I know that's a lot of work and I don't really want to take that. So I'm going to declare that as being what the pompous, snobby musicians do. I'm going to just, you know, strum my guitar and.
I have a theory about that. Okay. And I think we see this in multiple sort of threads. That's how punk music emerged, I think, because a lot of these guys were proud of the fact that they could barely play their instruments. If you read interviews from The Clash and stuff, it's like, I think the other thing that peaked was musicianship.
If they could wake up today and play like John McLaughlin, they would. So
true.
Don't tell me that,
but
they're
they
proud
couldn't.
Of it.
And so what they had to create a sound around the inability to play.
Correct.
And that's where punk music came out.
Correct.
And because I think a large part of these virtuosos of the 70s and 80s, some of these session guys or bands like, you know, Eddie Van Halen, you know, performance on the instrument became such somewhat inaccessible to the average musician that we needed to create another sound. And so punk was that.
That's
I think
true.
Grunge was that to a large degree.
It was.
I know garage rock, so when you think of the White Stripes and things like that.
Yeah, Black
we're intentionally
Keys.
Playing poorly.
Another color.
What's that?
Black Keys, another color.
Yeah, exactly.
White Stripes, Black Keys.
Von Bondies, those types. You know, people love that instrument or that style, but I think it's a reaction to, we can't do better than that, so we need to create a new sound.
I think so, too. I do.
And so the other, do you have something to add to that? Because I have sort of a follow-up.
No, I'm formulating something, but go ahead.
So if it starts to pull back, like you said, then obviously what happened before that was the peak. Now you could say, like I did about music technology, you know, there are things that are far more advanced, like an auto-tune or pitch correct and, you know, stuff like that, technologically speaking, but are they better?
Right.
And I would say the same thing about musicianship. Like, you could go on YouTube, and I think a couple of our guests, I know Vernon Porter said this, and somebody else said this about guitar players. You can find guys that could shred way faster than, you know, Eddie Van Halen even.
Or play the perfect rhythm track.
Right.
You know, I think of like a Corey Wong, but I marvel at it.
But is it better?
But is it better, and does it have mojo?
Right. Know? And that's what I feel like, even stuff, because I like Corey Wong.
I do too, but
I can't feel anything.
I don't
of it.
Feel it.
Yeah.
That's right.
So all of that, I think, goes back to why we're saying it peaked. And I was a guy who grew up in the 90s, musically. I had a 90s sounding band, so it's not like I'm throwing stones at something, you know, that I didn't, a glass house I didn't live in. But maybe someday I'll look back at the grunge era and say there's more to explore there,
too.
Well,
there was a reason for it. It needed to happen.
Right.
I mean, we'd always talk about things culturally in terms of the pendulum moving. It needed to happen. There's no doubt that it needed to happen. And I'm not slamming it. And there's no doubt that, you know, hip-hop kind of needed to happen. The black culture needed its thing. It put a major imprint. And it quickly spread through all different sorts of music. We hear it in country nowadays, you know, and pretty much every pop song on the radio today is either hip hop beat or it's a remix beat.
Yeah.
If you go down the top 10, so I understand the reasons for all those, and they all had their place. But the question is, from a technical standpoint and an artistic standpoint, are they better than where we got to, say, by 85, 86. I see decline in it. I think it could be quantified musically. Mm-hmm. But of course, as soon as you try to quantify something musically, people, you know, say, yeah. Oh, you're just a jazz snob. You're a Berkeley snob. Yeah, it's which I am.
Right. And some of it is obviously subjective.
It is.
But
there's listeners that don't want to hear all of those notes, lack of a better term. Yeah. There's people that just want to hear the blues. You know, I can't figure out how you want to listen to the same 12-bar progression and a scale that, you know, the lead player is playing a scale of 5 notes over that thing all night long. And I know it's not about the notes, but there are people that just want it refined down to just the basics so I can hear the emotion of the player.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But when you said it needed to happen, so because we've talked on this podcast before, like the evil David Foster era, is he now we're wondering, is he really evil? But there, it got to a point where everything was a ballad. Right? Yeah. Everything was super produced and polished and buttoned down. Going back to why did maybe grunge emerge and garage rock after that?
Yes.
It's like it needed to happen. I was right there at the same time needing a different sound palette in my brain. So I liked it. But once you give it some time to go away,
mm-hmm.
and then you realize what you're missing, which brings us back to this podcast. That's why you want to go back and say, wow, evil David Foster was a mad scientist himself. Bob Clearmountain was a genius. You might not like everything that came out of it,
right?
But oh my God,
I couldn't stand back in the day, and you know this, I couldn't stand Phil Collins back in the day. I was so inundated and overwhelmed, yet I am going through or maybe even a first time of really understanding how good Phil Collins solo records were, as well as the Phil Collins heavy Genesis records at the same time. I'm getting into that stuff and realizing how good it was now that I can pull myself away from hearing him on every other song on the radio. Kind of Michael McDonald, people say the same thing. He went through the same thing where people just said, oh, enough.
Exactly. You know? But now look at us now. Right. We're like, well, where's more Michael
now
McDonald?
Now he's on the Yacht Rushmore, right?
Exactly.
Unquestioned.
Right, unquestioned. It's funny because you turned me off to Phil Collins before I even had a chance to get into him. You brainwashed me that, and all I could hear was the things I didn't like about his drumming because they were like, No One Is to Blame by Howard Jones.
Yep.
There's a version I fell in love with that he comes along and does this loud blah, 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 blah messiness all over the place. I'm like, oh God. But now I go back and listen to it.
He lays
like,
some nice harmonies in that version though too. It's not just the drumming.
Well, everyone's got to get over the fact that these people are evil. Just, you know, give it 20 years.
You know
come
what?
Back.
No one has applied the word evil except you. You're the only one that's ever put evil in front of one of these
this
guys'
is
names.
True. Evil Phil Collins. That was it, right? And never anyone else.
Yeah.
So we are booking guests, by the way. So
as long as you're evil.
So here we are. We are sort of resetting. Origin Story is the sequel. So this season we will be exploring all of this and more in greater detail. Not drifting too far out of the harbor, mind you, because Yacht Rock is an integral part of this.
We're not,
it's the whole reason we got here.
We're not throwing Yacht Rock overboard. We're growing beyond it.
Obviously the pun
bell
is still
here. We're not going to call beyond Yacht Rock either.
Oh, God.
We can't do that.
Let's not get into that trouble again.
All right.
All right. So I'll give you an example because one of our episodes last season was about Sophistopop.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to just share one of my favorite examples. And it's actually, you brought this up when we were on Shelter at Sea Saturday nights at Yacht Rock Miami.
Mm-hmm.
You brought up the band ABC in the first album, which is The Lexicon of Love.
Yeah.
Listen to the way this album starts. So this is the intro to a song that presumably they want to get on radio at some point.
The first song on the record,
Exactly. It's called Show Me. And you're hearing orchestrations. You are going to hear a real horn section.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to hear a band, real bass player, real drums. You're going to hear some synths on top of this stuff. They're exploring the best of both worlds. This album is a masterpiece sonically. And then listen to once Show Me kicks in. Listen to this groove they're laying down and how tight it is.
And one of the things that, because we're now into this 80s era, and this is a perfect example that you brought up that I didn't have any idea you're going to pull it up, but give you a few seconds to listen and isolate the snare drum sound. And now when it comes to the verse, check out what happens.
Once I needed your love, but that was just one thing left on my mind.
Entirely different sonically. I don't know what he did. It's obviously a very roomy, big snare drum, and it gets very tight and clean. But these are the kind of mix tricks that, in this case, is very subtle, mm-hmm. but that became part of using the studio as a creative tool.
Just think of the time and the care and the effort and the sweat and labor that went into doing all those things. Miking an orchestra, miking a horn section, there's sax solos, there's, you know, you're doubling a bass line with a synth, which needs to be perfect. It's like, holy smokes. And the brains behind this is a guy by the name of Trevor Horn, is that right?
Trevor Horn, yes.
And who is he?
Trevor Horn is the one that produced this album. No, he's one of the great, great 80s producers, English producer, probably most famous for bringing Yes back to life with the 90125 album. That's one of his great productions. Sonically, that is an amazing record. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, another big one. Later on, produced Seal. There's many things that I'm missing. Simple Minds. But he is very much like almost the British sound of the 80s, you know, from that perspective.
It just, this album is just top to bottom. It's just genius.
Yeah.
So those are the things that we want to explore. So I think if you love Yacht Rock, for example,
mm-hmm.
and you don't love that, I think something's wrong, right?
Yeah, you're doing it wrong, as Nick would say, right?
Exactly.
There's a couple things I had on my list that I thought we would consider looking at. You mentioned David Foster. You know, he had a definite second act, the mm-hmm. evil side. You know, we want to explore that. There's other adjacent stuff that was contemporaneous, like Journey, mm-hmm. Foreigner, even David Bowie, things like that. Some of the electro pop, synth pop, Duran Duran we want to look at, maybe Prince we want to look at. These are all things we couldn't look at before, but they belong in the conversation if we're going to talk about it as one larger era.
Yeah. Where would you put prog rock? Because that sort of ascended during the time, the same, similar time period, really, a little earlier.
Yeah, it probably got its birth in mostly in the late 60s. I think it came to its peak probably between 72 to 77, so the earlier part of this era. Yeah, and then, you know, it kind of had, if you can call it a second wind. Some people don't think of Yes as 90125 or Big Generator albums as being prog. They're definitely more 80s big pop records, but they're certainly still got that prog influence. So maybe that's sort of the second chapter. But yeah,
it's another case though of like, let's explore the boundaries of what can be accomplished in music, right? Both in terms of how they write, how they perform, how they conceptualize, all of that stuff, which is art. And I don't even really like prog, to be honest with you.
Right.
Some of it I like, but I can appreciate it. Part of what makes me appreciate it is the fact that I can't understand it.
Probably why you don't like it, too.
It's probably a
dose of each.
Yeah, exactly. But I definitely appreciate it. All right. I just think that's kind of what this slice of musicdom is all about. So that's where we're going this season.
Right.
We are also going into lightning rounds. However, we should note that we are slightly changing up the lightning round.
Right.
We will still be finding things at sea.
We will still be finding things at sea. We'll still be having buried treasures. Right?
And unburying them.
Unburying, right.
But since the whole podcast is off the map now, that goes away.
Yeah, so you can't handle the truth. So what we're going to do is we're going to just kind of have an opportunity for final word, final thoughts. And if you got something hanging in the back of your mind that you want to, you know, maybe it'll be another cliffhanger question. You never know.
Okay. All right. Well, does the sound effect still work?
It's unchanged.
Ooh, sounds a little louder, maybe.
Mm.
Maybe 10 bells.
Huh.
All right. So how do we do this again? All right. Found at sea. You want to flip a coin to see who goes first?
Sure. Heads I win, tails you lose.
All right. Heads it is.
What heads I win. All right.
Okay.
I was just, it was such a serendipitous thing. I had my 70s, 80s mega list on that I've touted so many times on this show. And this is so fits with looking into the 80s as, and beyond Yacht Rock, in saying, okay, what we know that the 80s got into this production thing, right? Mm-hmm. For good or for bad. And two songs in a row came on, and the intros are identical. First, we've got, as we've played before, what do you recall from the intro of Chicago Stay the Night?
Gated snare in my face.
How many?
Four?
Four. All right, let's play Go West's Goodbye Girl. And somehow they came up back to back on Spotify as I was kind of making notes for this, and I thought, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, it is perfect. All right. All right. Well, lest ye at sea fear we are drifting too far out of the harbor, I am going to take a listener submitted found at sea. So here's some viewer mail.
Mail's in.
Okay. This is from listener Roderick, who sends us, hey guys, I wanted to recommend this song for the next Find at Sea. This just happened to be the next one. Mm. He had to wait a whole 6 weeks to get here. So never heard of this artist, never heard of the song. This is Paul Clark doing Drawn to the Light. I think he wants our thoughts. I think it's definitely for me, Yachty, but that's no longer for us to.
Right.
Or never really was.
It clearly sounds like yacht rock to me. It's the CCM yacht rock. This belongs on the John O'Grady playlist. Remember we did that episode with them? We explored this. And yep. This definitely comes off of the Chris Christian tree, whether by influence or is there any connection?
Not that I can find. I don't recognize any of these names on the credits. And you almost think you're hearing Michael McDonald in the backup vocals.
You do.
Unless these are all pseudonyms, there's not a Yacht Rock cat on this record.
Jamie Starr in there?
No. Like this, the saxophone player, by the way, Steve Tavaglione.
He plays some beautiful stuff in there.
Yeah. It's a good tune. I love the tune. That's a great submission. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much. All right. Listen to Roderick. You're off to a good start.
All right.
On our behalf, or we
still
are
still doing buried
behalf.
Treasure, and it is to you, sir.
Okay, my buried treasure is I'm so glad we're off the map because I have a song from Exile who I know's been, are they certified?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know,
they've got some certification.
Yep, well, here it is, Heart and Soul.
Well, that explains a lot. I listened to Sports the other day, and it says all songs written by, you know, Johnny Cola, Huey, whatever, the other guys in the band, except four. And I didn't, the names didn't mean anything to me. And I thought, oh, where'd that song come from? Heart and Soul. I can't believe it.
It's written,
Exile.
Yeah. I never knew that existed. It was written by Mike Chapman and Nicky Chin.
Oh, yeah.
So that was off Exile's album under the same title. Heart and Soul from 1981. And then Huey Lewis and the News covered it in 83.
Wow. Mixed by Bob Clearmountain.
Yes.
Wow. All right.
How about that for our buried treasure?
I don't know if I can touch that. But again, something that's completely outside of the yacht rock realm, but era appropriate. I sent this to you because I was listening to the early 80s Heart record, self titled Heart. What year was that? 83, maybe? And the song These Dreams. These dreams go on when I close my eyes. Every second of the night, I live another life. These dreams that sleep when it's cold outside. Written by Bernie Taupin.
Really?
And Martin Page.
No kidding.
The reason, well, first of all, there's some other interesting personnel on this record before I get to the point. So obviously Ann Wilson, Nancy Wilson, Mark Andes from Firefall was on bass at the time.
Yep.
Peter Wolf on synthesizers. Now that would be the, not the Jay Giles Peter Wolf, but yep, the producer Peter Wolf. Mickey Thomas is on backups.
Wow.
On several songs.
Mickey Thomas is from, so people know,
Starship.
Yep.
Grace Slick of Jefferson Starship on backups on one tune. Funny how this goes. Johnny Cola from Huey Lewis and the News
oh
on
God,
background vocals on two of the tracks. But the, what caught my attention is I haven't in so long, I find myself sort of multitasking where I'll have music playing and the TV on and I'll be scrolling Facebook at the same time. I'm not absorbing any one of these three.
Yeah.
This time I said, I'm going to go back to, you know, the way we used to do it as kids. I'm going to just have the record playing and I'm going to hold the lyric sheet.
Yep.
And I'm going to look at the pictures, I'm going to read the credits, and I'm going to read the lyrics.
Good for you, young man.
Dude, these lyrics, I can't quite make... Well, they're so beautiful.
Oh, they are.
They're so beautiful, but they... You get what he's saying, but it doesn't say what he's saying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me just... I got to read these to you. And this, I don't want to go into bad lyric reading, because these are so good. Spare a little candle, save some light for me. Figures up ahead, moving in the trees. White skin in linen, perfume on my wrist, and the full moon that hangs over these dreams in the mist. Darkness on the edge, shadows where I stand. I search for the time on a watch with no hands. I want to see you clearly, come closer than this, but all I remember are the dreams in the mist. And then the chorus is, these dreams go on when I close my eyes. Every second of the night, I live another life. These dreams that sleep when it's cold outside, every moment I'm awake, the further I'm away. Is it cloak and dagger? Could it be spring or fall? I walk with a cut through a stained glass wall. Weaker in my eyesight, the candle in my grip, and words that have no form are falling from my lips. Oh, man. Yeah. Finally, the last verse. The sweetest song is silence that I've ever heard. Funny how your feet in dreams never touch the earth. In a wood full of princes, freedom is a kiss, but the prince hides his face from dreams in the mist. It's like, holy moly.
That's kind of case in point right there. I mean, it's a little different than We're Never Getting Back Together.
But we get it. You understand yeah, the song, but these words don't, there's just pure artistry.
Yeah, it's poetry.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Yeah. Again,
it had to be Bernie. That had to be what he brought to it, and yeah, then Martin did the music.
Yes. Yeah, well done. All right. That was your final thought?
It can be. My only final thought, the other thing that we talked about, and we've kind of alluded to it here, we've brought up the name Foster, we've brought up the name Clear Mountain. We're going to explore Sonics mm-hmm, a lot more than we did before. Sonics in the sense of doing things artistically in the studio, making them bigger than reality. We've studied Sonics about how you record something beautifully. Now we're going to look at the production side probably a little more this year, I'm imagining. So we talked about maybe we'll do a Sonic, not musical, a Sonic one-on-one, Chicago 17 versus Hall & Oates Big Bam Boom.
Ooh.
So people, start listening to those two. Send us your notes about the sounds, the Sonics. What comparisons and differences do you hear? Not songwriting, not vocally or musically, Sonics. Let's see what we come up with.
And if your take is you hate both, don't bother sending us your comments.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, if you send that, I'm just going to delete it. So might as well not. Why waste all the right, cyberspace?
Cool. All right. Well, I have a final thought and a final thought. So the final thought is, depending on what day you are listening to this, then if you're listening to it on Thursday and the release day, tomorrow marks the release date of the new August Red banger.
Yeah, boy.
Fool Me Once. So yeah, let's have a little sneak peek of that. There it is.
Yes.
So our collaboration.
You'd like to call the old Marty and Bounce in there.
Yep. I really went all in on the yacht rock cliches.
That's okay.
I've got Fools in the lyrics in the song yep, title. I've got Wire Choir.
Oh, yeah.
I've got an old Marty and Bounce.
Yeah.
Don't have any sexy sax, but anyways, it's pretty good. So I say. thank you for your assistance, and hope y'all enjoy that one. The final thought is, mm-hmm. is lest ye at sea fear that we are drifting too far out of the harbor. Well, there, you just heard the pun bell, so there's one thing.
Yeah.
Number two out of three is the come back next week for an in-depth interview with Neil Steubenhaus.
Oh,
he is a yacht rock legend, among other things.
Yep.
So we're going to focus mostly on the yacht rock era with him. And then the third thing would be ahoy, polloi.